We're talking with Shad Frischman, who is the Vice President for Research at the Drawdown Project. I used to be on the 350 Steering Committee. We've hosted Drawdown a number of times. It sort of looks at ways that we can deal with the climate crisis beyond the usual solutions of more renewables and cutting emissions. But Shad, why don't you give us a brief introduction to what is Drawdown?
Sure, Mark. First of all, thank you for having me on your program today. It's a pleasure to be here and to talk to your audience. So Drawdown really is that point in time when atmospheric concentrations of greenhouse gases begins to decline on a year-to-year basis. Now, real simply, what that means is we're taking out more greenhouse gases than we're putting in to the atmosphere. And the proposition here is really pretty simple, Mark. It's if we can reduce the amount of heat-trapping gases that are up there in the atmosphere, we can affect global cooling, essentially stopping global warming and beginning the process of reversing it.
Now, Drawdown seems to have three major areas it focuses upon. One is to reduce the sources of emission. The second is to support things, particularly nature's way of putting carbon back into the soil. And then third is also improving society, and that looks at fostering equality and actually has a lot about health and education. But what are some of the, you know, reducing sources that, you know, Drawdown think is particularly critical?
Well, first is I think it's important to remember where those sources are actually coming from. And the reality is that they're coming from about just about everything we do as a species, right? Whether that's the electricity we're generating to turn on our lights, whether that's, you know, the appliances we use in our homes or to heat and cool our homes, for example, or what we're eating and how we're producing that food, to the materials we're making, et cetera, pretty much about everything we do creates a lot of energy or uses a lot of energy. It creates a lot of labor and also a lot of emissions. And that ends up going into the atmosphere. There's lots of different kinds of emissions. We hear most often about carbon dioxide, but of course there's methane, nitrous oxide, fluorinated gases, and other types of heat-trapping gases that we just produce a lot of through our human activities. And that enters the atmosphere. And then there are some other, there's another mechanism that happens with pulls that carbon dioxide in particular and some methane out of the atmosphere. And that's the magic, the miracle of photosynthesis, right? There are natural carbon sinks that pull out carbon dioxide and store it in land and ocean ecosystems or water ecosystems. And that happens every year. But about 59% of everything that gets into the atmosphere stays there. And so when we talk about reducing sources, we got to really think about how we turn off the tap as a starting point, right? We need to turn off the emissions, but we also have to do the flip side of that coin, which is turn up the sinks, right? We need to enhance those sinks so that we're pulling down more, and also really, really critical, stopping the emissions to start with. And there are solutions in all the different areas, every single area that we were just discussing in terms of human activity, right? You know, it's about renewable energy systems. We have to get to 100% clean renewable grid as soon as possible, because 25% of those gases come from our electricity generation. We also have to, we can improve our homes. We can retrofit our homes or with solutions like high efficient heat pumps or high performance glass to change out our windows. There are things we can do as we retrofit our homes or build new homes that can not only reduce the amount of emissions and energy that are consumed by buildings, but also the materials themselves. So we have to look to industry and think about how we're producing materials like alternative cements, or we're thinking about bio-based materials, not just for our building, but for everything else, like bamboo, right? We can use bamboo for bridges. We can use bamboo for buildings. We can even use bamboo for clothing. Now, right now, it's not very sustainable processes, but eventually we can get to a point where everything that we're producing can be made, many things we can produce and can be made with organic, natural materials. So there's lots of different types of solutions across the board. But some of the things I think are really interesting for everyday listeners that feel maybe disconnected with big utility, you know, utilities, right? I mean, we can have some power and influence over the types of energy that we choose. In some places in this country, in the United States, we have the option to choose different kinds of sources, but it's very limited. So, you know, trying to figure out how to build a utility scale solar PV farm, well, that's not in the purview of just everyday, you know, you and I. But what we do have are lots of solutions across the board that we can take on ourselves. These are things like how and what we're consuming every day in terms of what food we're eating, right? Whether that's the types of things that we purchase that are, you know, we want to be purchasing things that come from organic, regenerative farm, because regenerative agriculture actually is a solution to global warming. It helps to sequester carbon or pull carbon down and store it in soil, organic carbon. And it also improves our food production and our livelihoods and water retention. There's all these co-benefits to it. So we can choose to buy organic and regenerative produced food as a starting point. We can choose to buy products that are changing the materials that they're packaging their food in, to that, you know, using bioplastics or other types of more easily recyclable materials. We can also, perhaps most importantly, though, is really purchase the amount of food that we're going to consume. So we need to reduce our food waste. 30 to 40% of all food that's produced for human consumption is not consumed. And in high-income countries like the United States, we massively waste food at the end of the food chain, which means at the point of consumers, it means households. So that is really important. As household consumers, we in this country can choose to buy what we're actually going to consume and eat it. And not wasted at the end of the day. So preventing that food waste is one of those solutions that who would have thought, but it's really powerful. And then the flip side of that coin is actually what we are consuming.
Okay. Right? We're quickly running out of time, unfortunately. So I believe the first, you know, drawdown package about 100 solutions came out in 2017. Recently you did the drawdown review, had about 10 new points you wanted to focus upon. What were some of the things 3 years later that you thought needed to be more emphasized?
Well, yeah, I think, well, first of all, what needed to be understood is, first of all, that this is a system of solutions. I think that the first work that we did really highlighted, a ranking system, which is important for people to kind of gauge and compare different types of technologies and practices. But what we really wanted to show is those solutions and those technologies operate in an integrated system. So a system of solutions. And I think the new work that we've done with the review really highlights that these are all interconnected and woven together, and we need to address them as a system of solutions because of all the additional co-benefits that come along with implementing these solutions as a system. But the other side is what we really intentionally set out to do in the first book is focus on the solutions that are real, existing solutions that you can kind of go out and touch, taste, smell, feel the solutions, because they're real and they exist and they have a direct impact on reducing emissions or enhancing sinks. So it has a direct impact on that. So you can quantify those solutions based on how much they cost, how much they cost to operate, and what they quantify their effects on climate. The other flip side of the coin, though, is how do we actually accelerate the adoption of those solutions? How do we move faster and farther? And that's what we want to highlight in the review as well, is yes, these are solutions that have an actual measurement of doing something, right? A technology or practice does something. But we need the flip side of that. We need policy mechanisms, financial institutions. We need to build collective impact and how we, as individuals and as a collective, can create and build power and set ourselves goals that are actually achievable and move and change behavior and shifting capital towards those solutions. These are accelerators, right? They're not solutions in and of themselves, right? No policy itself is going to actually physically reduce emissions. But what a policy can do is incentivize behavior, to change behavior, to incentivize the implementation of these solutions. And that is an accelerator that allows us to get on track to achieving our goals for 2030, for 2040, and beyond.
Let me just jump in here. Say we've been talking with Shad Frischman of the Drawdown, drawdown.org. This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. I'll end up with a two-part question. One of the things that's always sort of fascinated me about the Drawdown is the importance of increased education for girls and women as a solution to climate. And then the second part of the question would be, it doesn't seem like Drawdown focuses much on, you know, trying to lobby legislators. Seems to be more about education. But, you know, can you briefly explain what your theory of change is? And we'll wrap with that.
Well, sure. I think to address your first question here, providing universal quality and access to education for boys and girls for 12 to 13 years of schooling, right? That has a dramatic impact on people's livelihoods. And we see this this shift when we educate or provide that quality education. We see changes in economic outcome. We see smaller family sizes. We see people more empowered to improve their own livelihoods and the livelihoods of their family and households. And what that translates to is an increased uptake of voluntary reproductive health care. So increased uptake of family planning. And that tends to be what happens. We see with 12 to 13 years of schooling, we see the smaller family size, which means reduced lower fertility rates. So when we're looking at the future as population seems to be burgeoning, we can quantify how much it would, you know, all of those, what I said earlier, all those sources, all the electricity, buildings, transportation, et cetera, required to provide all the services and goods to that large population can be reduced by essentially reducing future population growth, right, to more manageable, sustainable levels. And that means increased uptake of education as well as increased access to voluntary reproductive health care because those are so intertwined. And that's how we see a quantification of the reduced emissions. Of course, education has so many other benefits and to the adoption of all of these solutions. And of course, it's fundamentally important. Now, that's part of our theory of change. How do we educate people? How do we provide not just a swirl of information and data and to overwhelm people? Because Lord knows, we are right now swirling in information. But how do we create real knowledge, right? How do we create meaningful and useful knowledge so that when people can approach the climate crisis, approach climate action, they can do so from a space of understanding where their organizing principles are shifting from, you know, an exploitative extractive model to one that's really restorative, regenerative, that really, you know, that's our theory of change. When we can shift people's perspectives and understanding of what these solutions are, moving away from a problem-fixing mindset to a solutions-oriented mindset, we can really fundamentally shift the way the system itself operates. And so we don't do lobbying, we're not an advocacy, and we want to do that so that we can maintain our objectivity and we can really be an aggregation of humanity's brilliance and aggregation of humanity's knowledge and a vehicle through which we can disseminate that and provide it in useful, meaningful ways to any and all stakeholders to be able to act upon. And that's really our call to action. Take this information, find your own roadmap. What are the solutions that really resonate with you, and take them on as your organizing principle as you grow together with your community, linking arms to really create this future that we want, a regenerative future.
Well, thank you, Shad Frischman from the Drawdown Project. I know for Climate Week on Monday night you are doing, or the organization is doing a webinar, I believe at 7. That will be on your drawdown.org website or recording afterwards?
That's absolutely right. Tonight we're going to be having a wonderful event, Drawdown 2020. The time is now. Join me, our researchers, award-winning filmmakers, 5 CEOs of regenerative corporations, and some special guests, policymakers, and youth activists. That'll be tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It will be recorded and disseminated for everybody in the weeks to come.